I felt His presence, I shall remain and forever cherish.
Well, 15 albums as a Canadian independent artist, over 20 years of crisscrossing North America, and in the last few years, the entire globe, ladies and gentlemen, offering the gifts of story and song and a lifetime of chasing what it means to be a person of authentic Christian spirituality. We're going to talk a lot more about that one. This is Steve Bell. His career has produced multiple Juno Awards and a host of other industry accolades. He has sold over 300,000 units worldwide. Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Calgary, and then Drumheller. For several years. My father was a prison chaplain at Drumheller Prison. And then when I was about 12 or 13, I think, was when he moved to Stony Mountain, just north of Winnipeg. And my dad was a chaplain at the prison there. And then when I was 18, I moved into Winnipeg, so I've been there ever since.
Kind of an odd, tiny talent time question, but what's your best childhood memory growing up?
Well, that's it. Boy. One of the fondest memories I have, I thought about this yesterday, was I got a present at Christmas. I was about 8 or 9 years old. And it was one of these covered wagons, like it was a model, like a wood. It wasn't a plastic, it was a wood one. And it was way over my head, so my dad had to help me do it. And I just remember 2 weeks of working on this thing with my dad. It's about cool. The only gift I remember from my childhood. I think it was because of the dad connection, though.
Yeah.
Because we did this thing. It's one of those things where if you press down the sort of the front thing, a light comes on and... It was gorgeous.
Wow.
But I remember that because it was very fun because I just got to hang out with my dad doing this thing.
Siblings?
Yeah, I've got two sisters, an older sister and a younger sister.
Right. Are they musos?
Yeah, my older sister's a wonderful songwriter. My younger sister writes a bit and sings a bit too, but neither of them have sort of pursued it as a career.
Right.
They just more for their own.
I was trying very, very hard to find a clip from the Alf Bell Family Singers. And there's nothing out there, folks.
There's nothing out there. You know, we should put that out. I never thought of that. You could have called me. We did an album when I was about 12 years old, 12, 13 years old. And my mom taught us to sing. She's a great singer and piano player. And so we had this, you know, matching outfit, sort of Christian Partridge Family thing. And we'd go around and play churches. My dad's a preacher, so he'd preach and we'd sing. And it was mostly not promoting, but educating people in his work as a prison chaplain. So every Sunday night we were at some church somewhere between, you know, Calgary and Winnipeg singing. And so that was just kind of, that was who we were. We were just a singing sort of Prairie Von Trapp thing.
Daddy sang bass.
Yeah, it was a riot, you know. Like it was, and we liked each other, so it was okay.
You did?
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah.
I've interviewed a lot of preachers' kids over the years.
Yeah.
Actually, a few weeks ago, I caught up with Alice Cooper. Speaking of preachers' kids,
awesome guy.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's an amazing human being. We had a tremendous interview with him here, and then he was up at Barrie, and so we went out, got the invite to go.
Well, last year my whole family went out to see him in Winnipeg.
You did?
Yeah, it was.
Have to go out after the first song and put paper towels in your ears?
It was pretty loud.
Oh my goodness!
It was
goodness.
Pretty loud, but he was so funny. It was great, you know. And he's just so not scary. It's like he's such a nice guy, and you can tell that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How did you? I guess my question behind all of being a preacher's kid is, how did you not end up like someone like Alice Cooper? Because you're a pretty nice guy.
You know, my dad just had this amazing respect for us kids. We were never expected to be him. We were always expected to be us. And dad just had this capacity to he always used to say, like, a kid is a full human being, not a potential one. And so dad always treated us as full human beings with desires and plans and issues and stuff. And so it was just okay. Like, I always felt respected and loved, and I didn't have to be him, and it was fine. He was just, so as a result, it was okay for him to be him as well, right?
Yeah. That's a healthy mix. That's a healthy balance.
Yeah. He was a very unique kind of guy, especially for like a Baptist minister in, you know, the 60s and 70s, even back then. You know, but my mom had a massive nervous breakdown when I was about 7 years old.
Well, I was gonna ask you. I mean, your mom battled a crippling depression for most of her adult life.
Yeah.
And has spent long periods of time hospitalized for anxiety disorder.
Yeah.
And your father, as well, has lived with and managed bipolar disorder.
Bipolar disorder, yeah, yeah. So depression runs in the family.
Wow.
You know, and I've had my own bouts with it as well.
Well, I was
going to
say,
have.
But yours, I mean, there's a genetic reality there with some of that stuff.
I guess you'd suppose so. I can get pretty, I've gotten pretty dark a few times. Not for a while now. Mostly in my 30s, I had a couple of bouts that were pretty crippling, where I had to leave work and couldn't really function.
Now that you're in your 60s, it's not a problem.
You know, I don't know. It hasn't really been an issue in the last 15 years, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's, you know, where mom keeps on creeping back up on her, and dad just he's learned to manage it. Like I think the idea is if you manage the highs, the lows aren't so bad, and the bipolar thing. You know, mom has with her, it's just a matter of just the right, you know, cocktail of chemicals that keeps her balanced. And we've learned that. If that goes off, there's going to be problems.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, musical influences. I mean, the first time I heard you, this is what I pretty much thought of.
An only child alone and wild, a cabinet maker's son. His hands were meant for different work, and his heart was known to none. He left his arm and went his lone and solitary way.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Steve Bell singing in the background there.
That's so beautiful.
I mean, that's what I thought the first time I heard you. And I know you have that comparison, and there's a potential of living under that shadow that's destructive to your career, and you don't want to be, you know, like, for example, Jim Cole. Do you know Jim Cole? Jim Cole's...
Yeah, the James Taylor. Yeah, Taylor, I know him,
right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great guy, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Jim and I was watching Brian Duncan down at perform at a place down in Nashville, and a guy comes up to me and goes, "Hey, are you Drew Marshall?" And I was like, "How the heck does someone know me down here?" Right. "Oh, it's Jim Cole." "Oh, Jim, how you doing?" So there's a guy who's lived under the shadow of the James Taylor comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
Has it helped or hurt your career?
I don't think it's hurt it in any way. I don't think it's hurt.
Okay.
You know, I think with Jim, it's so, like, he writes like James. He sounds so much like him.
Yeah.
I think it's... No, I don't know. I think it's been fine.
Okay.
I think it's been fine. People like to say you sound like...
You sound like Dan Fogelberg. Yeah. You write like David Wilcox.
Oh, thank you.
Not the Canadian David
Not the Canadian Wilcox.
Just clarify that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's make sure people... Oh, I'm a huge Wilcox fan. He's brilliant. Have you had him on?
Not yet. This year. Yeah.
He's a very thoughtful guy.
Oh, tremendous.
Great musician.
A couple of great chats with him down in Australia when he was down there. Tommy Emmanuel and I have kind of become buddies.
You know Emmanuel?
Yeah, he's like just a freak show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's awesome.
He's been on the show a few times. And, Actually, he's going to come on in December after he finishes touring Europe and just talk about his battles that he had a tough time kicking the booze. So anyway, that's fairly new news, so he's going to open up and talk about that.
What an incredible player. That guy's just outrageous.
Yeah. So Bruce Coburn, certainly a major influence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And let's talk about Leo Kottke. Actually, when I saw Leo in Australia, I wanted him to stop playing and tell more stories.
You know, the first time I saw Leo play, it was the same thing. I was all excited to see him play. Yeah. And after the concert, what I remembered was his storytelling far more than the playing.
Like David Wilcox, same thing. Billie Holiday, T-Bone Burnett, Prince was an influence.
I love Prince. I think Prince is just absolute genius.
We'll delete that out later. Just get rid
not
of
an influence in the sense that he's influenced how I write.
Right.
I mean, clearly I don't sound like Prince, but I've listened a lot to him.
Yeah. John Michael Talbot, Jennifer Warnes, Joni Mitchell, Gillian Welch, Alison Krauss, Randy Newman, James Taylor.
Yeah.
Gillian Welch. I don't think I know her.
You know what? She's a major sort of writing force behind people like Alison Krauss.
Okay.
She's one of the people really feeding songs to that new bluegrass, new country, sort of thoughtful folk country.
Yeah.
She's an astounding songwriter. Absolutely astounding songwriter.
And Bjork?
Yeah, she's unbelievable. Yeah, she's just out there. I mean, I like music that you have to work a little bit for.
Nice.
And in my music, you don't, which is odd. Like, I don't make people work that hard for
no,
my music.
No, you do. You do. Lyrically, you do. Musically...
I'm pretty safe.
Musically, I think that's the palatable sense. That's the part of you that says, welcome. Then they get stuck into your song and go, holy crap, now I got to think.
Right, I suppose. Well, they don't have to, but they can. I mean, hopefully the music leaves some sort of trail to something deeper, but, you know.
How big of a fan of James Taylor are you?
Quite a bit. I mean,
Do you have a favorite song?
No. I mean, I just like all of his music. You know, for him, it's more of a place. Like, he puts you in a sort of a place. Like, I don't listen hard. Like, I mean, lyrically, he's not requesting a lot from me, even musically. But it's just, it's kind of just a comfortable place to be. You can put him on, you can listen hard to him, you can put him in the background. It's just melodic, it's nice, he's a gentleman.
Can you pull a James Taylor melody out of your hat just like that? Like right now with the guitar? Boom. Can you do it? Are you able to do something like that?
No, not really.
No. So people do the whole, hey, can you play? Hey, can you play? Right? You know, and do you stay away from that stuff?
Yeah. No, yeah. I've never really spent a lot. Like in my early days when I played clubs, we did a lot of cover stuff.
Yeah.
But I've never sat down and learned a bunch of other people's material just as a songwriter, unless I was going to do it for my own performances.
Yeah.
I mean, I do other people's songs in concert, but.
Sure.
Like a guy like Jacob Moon, you must know.
Oh.
I mean, he's great at a party. I mean, he can pull out Sting tunes.
Yeah.
He can sort of do the whole thing with acoustic guitar. He's amazing. He's stunning. Yeah. Yeah.
No. He's been on a couple times. Co-hosted. I like Jacob. I like him as a person.
He's a neat guy.
He's just a great cat. You know.
He's an amazing talent. Way undersung right now. He needs to be heard more.
Definitely. Yeah. Let's flash back to your longest writer's block ever.
Well, I might be in it right now. I'm not sure. mid-20s to mid-30s, I just stopped, like didn't write a thing. And in fact, to the point where I just sort of realized, I'd come to the point where I wasn't a songwriter. And thought in my early 20s, I kind of lucked out in a couple, and I wrote a few songs. I ended up playing for 10 years in the bars and mostly doing some covers, and ended up as a sideman in country bands for quite a few years, and just kind of waiting to find out what I was really supposed to do with my life. Because clearly I just stopped writing and I didn't feel I had anything to offer. And
you were sick of the narcissism in your own life, too.
Yeah, I was sick of the narcissism in my own life.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point I just sort of realized that every song I'd ever written was about me. And I remember looking at all my lyrics, I remember pulling them out one night and I wanted to vomit. Like there was something just so icky about it. And I hated
that. That's Hebrew for...
You know, and so I vowed that I wasn't going to write another song until it wasn't about me. It took me 10 years to write. We're self-absorbed. Well, I'm self-absorbed.
Oh, we are. Come on.
I think we are. I think it's safe to say that.
What was the first song you came out with after your break?
Well, you know what? It was when I started connecting to Psalms. And because the Psalms are about me, but they're about more than me, right?
And 80% of your first four albums
were Psalms.
Came out.
It was the Psalms that rescued me out of not being able to write, you know, because somehow I found myself in them. I mean, I think as a songwriter, you're lying if you're going to say you're going to write a song that you're not part of.
Mm.
You know, then there's nothing wrong with you being present in your songs, but when it's all to draw everybody's attention to your, you know, your angst and your deepest sorrows and your unique suffering, there's just something that's really whacked about that. But when you can, you know, especially using ancient poetry to sort of connect to more universal themes, the same, but where you're, you know, that is. So for me, it was Psalm 90. Satisfy us in the morning with your love. May the favor of the Lord rest upon us in our land and establish for us all the work of our hands. And I remember when I read that and just it was a 35 years old and I thought my career was over and I didn't know what to do with myself and had kids and I was really afraid in terms of how to pay for my family and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that the Lord would establish work of my hands. I mean, I remember that it struck me and I remember bursting into tears, you know, that I needed work, you know, that was uniquely mine but actually did generate income. I mean, just as simple as that.
Mm.
And there I was in Scripture. There was my fear right there, and the song just kind of wham, it came out real fast. And that was the beginning.
Nice. Yeah. Steve Bell in studio with us today, folks. Let's get a tune going. Can you play us a little
something? Want me to play some?
I'd love.
Sure.
Oh, you happen to have your guitar with you.
It's right here.
Wow.
Awesome.
That's handy. That is good. Well, set this up.
I got a new album called Devotion. This is it was produced by a guy named Roy Salmon. Some might remember Salmon and Mulder from the late 70s, 80s.
Was that from that science fiction show? Was that?
Mulder, right, from X-Files.
X-Files, that's it.
He'll get a kick out of that.
Yeah.
But his wife wrote this. This is called The Lorica. It's from the Lyricas from St. Patrick's Breastplate.
Ladies and gentlemen, on The Drew Marshall Show, Steve Bell.
I bind unto myself today the gift to call on the Trinity, the saving faith where I can say, come three in one, no one in three, be above me as high as a noonday sun, be below me the rock I set my feet upon, be beside me the wind
on my left and right. Be behind me, encircle me with your truth and light. La da 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 da. I bind unto myself today the love of angels and seraphim, the prayers and prophecies of saints, the words and deeds of righteous men. Be above me as high as a noonday sun. Be below me the rock I set my feet upon. Be beside me the wind on my left and right. Be behind me, encircle me with your truth and light. La da 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 da. God's ear to hear me, God's hand to guide me, God's might to uphold me, God's shield to hide me against all powers deceiving, against my own unbelieving, whether near or far. I bind unto myself today the hope to rise from the dust of earth, the songs of nature giving praise to Father's Spirit, living Word. Be above me as high as the noonday sun. Be below me the rock I set my feet upon. Be beside me the wind on my left and right. Be behind me, or circle me with your truth and light. La da 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 da. I bind unto myself today the gift to call on the Trinity.
On the Drew Marshall Show, Steve Bell, live and in living color. I got to ask you, you've been quoted as saying that songwriting is very much of a spiritual wrestling and journey. And people have described your career, Steve, as a lifetime of chasing what it means to be a person of authentic Christian spirituality. Now, maybe this is just me missing it, but how come I don't really see or feel any negative vibes or depressing lyrics or guttural spiritual angst in your songs? They seem, for the most part, to be quite peaceful and pleasant and palatable.
I think usually by the time I get to writing songs, I've wrestled the demon down, and maybe the grief or the suffering or the anxiety or whatever the stress was behind it is sort of a subtext. Hmm. Yeah, and I think this comes from my youth when I had this sort of situation when I just sort of realized I was dumping my crap on other people and I just didn't like it, you know. And so then I thought there's nothing wrong with wrestling through some things and then out of a place of peace then coming back at things. And so usually my own struggle comes out in the storytelling much more than the songs. So in concert you get a lot more of that than you do in the...
Yeah, but one aspect of your songwriting that I kind of... This is going to be a bit bold for me to say this. I kind of disagree with, okay? You have made an intentional choice not to include personal story in your songs. In your songs, for the vast majority, if not all, that personal story comes out the chatter between songs. Right.
I would say... No, I don't think I'd say I've made a personal choice not to. It's just the way the songs have come out. Like I would never say I will not put my story in the song, but it's usually by the time the song comes out, it's just the way, you know. It's usually like a scripture or a poem that grabs me, that right. sort of gives an overall umbrella to what I've been wrestling with, and I like that, and then I write that, and my story is sort of the subtext of why maybe I connected to that particular piece of. So I do so much writing, you know, robbing ancient texts. Hmm. I do very little writing of, you know, where I'm starting from scratch. Here's a Steve Bell idea or thought.
So why Much
but it's
like,
not deliberate. It's just the way it works for
well,
me.
Well, no, but I wonder about that because, like, let's compare yourself to, say, someone like Mark Schultz, okay? And his writing style these days is all story. It's
narrative,
you know,
yeah.
Very narrative, you know, the soldier, the letters to war and all, you know.
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
And it just seems to be really gripping people. And I think I remember reading somewhere where you said, you know, you might shed a tear over those kind of story songs, but does it really last? Is there a lasting effect in you? And so that was the way of I think you were trying to describe. That's why I don't do that in songs. I want something a little deeper. And,
oh,
and so, sort of to summarize this, another quote from you would be, I don't really care if I have a hit today as long as it's still being sung 200 years from now. That's a thrill for me.
Yeah, I've always wanted to write something that transcended my own story.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, those are the songs. I mean, this sounds so almost vain or whatever, but I mean, I'd like to write a classic song. Like,
sure.
I mean, that's, you know, that to me is something, the idea that you could write something that could not only go across, you know, demographic lines, but generational lines and even, you know, centuries. To me, that'd just be fantastic. But at a certain point, I mean, then the more particular to you the story or the narrative is, the less likely that's going to move on. You know, so again, I think that's why I often gravitate towards ancient texts, because they are already that.
Mm.
You know, these are the things that have survived, and they move me. And so in the end, I'm sharing what really profoundly moves me.
Can I just share with you one of the scenes that moved me the most in your career was when you came out with the Winnipeg, was it Philharmonic Symphony or
Symphony,
whatever it's
yeah.
Are all symphonies called Philharmonic?
What, no, you know, it's,
what, yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know. And they're really particular about
and
it.
And who's Phil? And does he really sing harmonics? You came out and there's, you know, they're all dressed up and it's a fancy theater and they're getting ready and here comes Ladies and Gentlemen, Steve Bell. Steve Bell comes out and you bow to the orchestra, you bow to the audience, you sit down and then you kind of look to the left, look to the right and go, I forgot my gum.
Oh, yes. I was sitting there. I got gum in my mouth.
That was classic. classic stuff. And then some guy came out and you spit it in his hand.
It was my drummer took it. Yeah, yeah, my drummer took it.
You said he's new. He doesn't know he doesn't have to do that. Man, that was funny stuff. But speaking of the symphony, that first track we played at the top of the interview, tell us more a little bit about that CD, because that was a major project, dude.
Oh, man, that was an awesome thing. We got a call. Dave, was it 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
About 2 years ago from the Winnipeg Symphony saying, would Steve be willing to do a concert with the WSO? And my first thought was they either don't know my music or they want me to sort of maybe do a cover thing, you know, because,
right.
You know, like, you know, get a crooner and he can come in and he can do a bunch of, you know, 70s pop songs or
sure,
something. And
sure.
So just kind of phoned him back, said, I really don't want to do that. I got other stuff I want to do. And they says, no, we know what you do. We want you to do your stuff. And it was very surprising to me. And they said, have you heard my music? You know, and they said, yes, we have. And so it turned out something to the effect of they had kind of polled the orchestra about who'd like to do a concert with, and my name came up, and so we did.
Really?
Yeah. And then we didn't know if anybody would show. I mean, people are used to spending $15 to go to a Steve Bell concert, and so now, I mean, you got it.
You got to jack up the
price
if you got a symphony
there. Yeah,
you got to
jack up the
price,
and yeah, are people going to do this? And
yeah.
We were really kind of afraid. It was a big thing, and sold out the Winnipeg concert hall. And
way to go.
It was just wonderful. And you know, the whole nice thing about it that was so majestic and wonderful about that evening is that my whole career has been a Winnipeg project. You know, I've been supported by all kinds of people for many, many, many years. And it just sort of, it didn't feel like my celebration. It felt like our celebration. You know what I mean? It just
yeah.
sort of felt like...
Community.
This was a celebration. Look how far we've come. And I think the audience felt as much their conscious as it was mine. Because I looked out and I just knew everybody. And everybody had been some significant part of me
cool.
at some point. It was really a nice thing.
That's very cool. So
and then that transferred in. Then we thought, we got to do this again. We recorded it, put out the album. Then we started doing concerts right across the country with symphonies.
Can people still get that CD?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, on our website, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I think the Christian bookstore should have it as well.
That's really the point I wanted to get across. Because I think getting your music is a must.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And you can quote me on that.
And I'm going to.
Thank you. Christianity Today talked about the hard work, or you talked about the hard work of writing. That's hard work because there's so many distractions. I'm sorry, this is a stellar quote here. And it can often feel self-indulgent when you have a wife and kids and life gets crazy and the bathrooms haven't been cleaned in 6 weeks. And now you want to sit down and attend to an inner impulse. I cannot believe you said that sentence after mentioning the bathrooms. I laughed out loud. I LOL'd that.
I never even thought of that, but that is very funny.
Oh, my
goodness.
I'm
a funny guy.
You are.
I'm a very funny guy. That's hilarious.
Something that's not funny is the worship industry these days.
Oh, yeah.
And you know me, I have that edge for, I have the spiritual gift of pessimism. and I'm trying to get a little more positive. By the way, let me just interrupt this and just say this. 2 weeks ago, I had Ken and Barbie back on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Randall
mm-hmm.
and Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
Great friendship with those guys. And I told them this when they were in the studio, that when that whole Huntley thing went down with me being on the thing, and somebody said, oh, you sent you the link. You got to watch this, man. He really gives it to them. He makes them look like blah, 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 blah. And you sent me an email and said, dude, what the heck are you doing, right?
Yeah.
And we corresponded back and forth in that. And I still tell people today, I have so much respect for the way you did that, the fact that you did that, and the way we were able to work through it and just understand each other a little bit.
Right. Yeah. No, it wasn't antagonistic.
No, not at all. But it was the manner with which you did it, the content, and I could sniff test that there was no judgmental arrogance there at all.
No, I didn't mean that.
No, not at all. No, and so I've often said to people, there was only one guy that really made me think hard, rethink through my motives on this, and it was you. So thanks for that.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Appreciate it. Just thought I'd throw that in there.
Okay.
But back to the worship music industry. I find it very hard to worship with corporate singing, personally. Mm. And I find it very hard finding quality Christian music. I know my musical tastes are a tad on the arrogant side, but I just find myself living in McDonald's land. Fast food, kind of flavorless, non-nutritional rubbish.
Right.
The industry has said, yes, that's what we want, because that's what the masses want. And I'm going, what the heck is wrong with you dumb sheep? Stop buying this rubbish.
Yo, there you go. I'm with you. The industry is just, they're just industry. This is a capitalistic society.
Yes.
Let the market decide. We've decided that that's how our economy is going to work. And Christians are no different. The Christian industry works the same thing. If it sells, we'll put it out. The issue isn't the industry. The issue is the people that are buying this stuff. If we're incapable of reading a book that challenges us, or a poem, or listening to music that isn't just comfort food, this is what we're going to get. And it's big money. It's really, really big money. And so it's, I don't think the industry needs to change. I think seminaries need to change. We need pastors that can tell a good song from a bad song, or a good, theological lyric from a bad one, and insist that their congregations aren't allowed to sing certain things because it's just bad. My daughter, when she was 16 and she was wondering if she was a singer, and I said, well, Sarah, your dad's got a studio. Let's just go put something. Let's record something. And she says, like what? She's not a writer. I said, I don't know. Well, go listen to the Christian radio station, pick five or six songs you really like. We'll just go demo them to see what it's like.
How'd that go?
Well, it's pretty funny because my daughter she's fairly, at the time, was a typical teenager and into magazines and looks and boys and all that kind of stuff, and not a particularly deep reader or anything. And so she came back about 6 weeks later. She says, Dad, I can't hear anything that I'd be proud to sing. And I was like, awesome.
There's a commentary.
But that really struck me. Like, she didn't mind listening to it, but when she actually thought about putting her voice to it, all of a sudden she went, this isn't good.
Hmm.
And it's just too bad. We're not a very deep thinking people. And so therefore.
We're one giant cult of self expression.
Yeah. And again, I think, yeah. I mean, I hate being too hard because that's also a generalization, right? I mean, there's great music that comes out.
That's what talk radio is all about. We're supposed to generalize.
there are good things that come through, and of course, whatever.
It takes more work to understand Jean Vanier than it does to understand the Prayer of Jabez.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. And what happens is that we've got a society now that really doesn't want to have to work for anything, right? Including food or. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why McDonald's works. Like, you don't have to develop a palate, a discerning palate to eat a Big Mac. But to really understand fried food actually takes some effort. And you might have to get through a few meals that you don't like, but it's worth it if you talk to people that are sort of, culinary geniuses or wine geniuses or song geniuses.
Is there a Scotch genius out there?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Just thought I'd ask.
Definitely, there is that. I remember, I got to be friends with Ray Hotola, the assistant conductor of the Symphony Orchestra. I'm in a kind of a songwriting sort of desert. I haven't written anything for a long time. And she was on the road with me last year. I was complaining to her about this. And I said, I haven't written for a long time. I don't know what to do. And she says, well... She says, Steve, she says, you got to start listening to something new. Like, you always listen to the same stuff, you know. And so she started feeding me all this avant-garde music, and it's nuts. It's just wacky, and some of it is just hard to appreciate. And she says, do it, work at it, work for it. And I'll never write avant-garde music, I'm sure, but I'm starting to. There's something in my soul that's starting to breathe again, and starting to get excited to get up in the morning, and just kind of pushing the boundaries. And it's just work. That's all. But we tend to just want to go to what's comfortable, theologically, poetically, melodically, and we tend to distrust...
Even relationally.
And relationally, yeah. And we're just, as a result, I mean, in Christianity, we've really fostered, almost fosters fear, fosters anything that's not us, rather than being excited about anything that's not us, which I think we should be.
Sure.
We should be looking for the thing that is not us.
Sure. Well, and I mean, you've been in love with Catholic tradition since your teens.
Oh, my, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Spent much time in Catholic monasteries.
Yeah.
Been highly influenced by Chesterton and other great Catholic scholars like Father MacDougall.
There's a scholar for you.
Why haven't you become a member of the Catholic Church yet? That sounds like a snarky little evangelical going, well, if you like them so much.
Yeah, why don't you... Well, you know what? I'm actually worshiping in an Anglican church right now, which some people would say is an oxymoron.
Medium.
That is kind of a happy medium.
Worshiping in an
Anglican. But I love the liturgy. I think for me, I couldn't take... In terms of, I couldn't be an authentic Catholic without taking the whole thing to heart. And there's something about the authority structure that I just haven't quite been able to, I wouldn't be able to submit to, I think, in the end. And so I just have to realize I couldn't go all the way, so I couldn't legitimately call myself Catholic.
Right.
But, I mean, I think the Catholic Church saved my faith. There's no question about it. But I found, and I was very, very close to becoming Orthodox about 5 years ago until I realized that if I was going to take that final step, I'd never be able to have communion with my father again. And that's where I had to stop and pull back, and I just sort of realized, well, that would be a sin for me to make that leap. I couldn't do it. So I found my way into the Anglican Church, which sort of allows you to be a little bit Protestant, a little bit Catholic.
Yeah, it's like Donnie and Marie.
Exactly.
The Donnie and Marie of Christendom.
Yes, it is exactly that.
Okay.
There's a wonderful congregation in Winnipeg I'm thrilled to be part
good.
Of. So
good. All right. Well, we would be remiss to not ask you to maybe play one more little tune for us in the studio, if you'd be all right.
Do you want
with
another
that.
One?
I would love another. Well, I'd love another six. But do you have something already prepared, or do you have maybe a Coburn one you could pull out of your hat?
I could do a Coburn one for you.
It just happens to be
that
something I'm in love with.
Happens to be there.
Yeah.
Is there anything in particular you'd like to mention, or?
Gee, that's hard. Picking a favorite Coburn song is like, you know, saying which one of my kids do I love the most.
Oh, yeah, man. Okay. Out under spreading trees, soon they're gone behind the sign. White letters pointing to the long white line, and I'm going to the country. Oh, la 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 la. I'm going to the country, sunshine, smile on me. I can smell the grass growing in the field. Wind in my hair tells me how it feels. Farmhouse, silver roof flashes by. Tractor, trailer, truck says goodbye with a sigh. And I'm going to the country. Oh, la 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 la. I'm going to the country. Sunshine, smile on me. Singing, I'm singing in my bones. doesn't much matter now where I'm going. Get it when I get there is what I'll do. And if I get enough, I'll give some to you. And I'm going to the country. Oh, happy as can be. I'm going to the country. Sunshine, smile on me. I'm going to the country. Sunshine, smile on me. Sorry. La da da, la da da. Beautiful.
Man, that was a tight end. Awesome. Boy, that's tight.
Yeah, I love that song. People are always disappointed when you pull that one out because they want the big, you know, rocket launch or something. But the reason why Coburn's so pissed off is because he believes in this.
Yeah.
And he hates everything that's not this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and his whole sort of prophetic edge is because I think he's got a vision of the beautiful that keeps on creeping up in his music. Like, he keeps on trying to be the mad guy, but there's so many gorgeous moments that betray him. I think he's had a beatific vision, and that's why he's mad.
Well, another stellar CD by Steve Bell that you can get on the website. What's it called again?
My Dinner with Bruce.
My Dinner with Bruce, that's yeah. Right. When I got that, I just went, oh my. So seriously, I woke up to that song. Because what I was doing was I was waking up to the news.
Right.
The radio would go off, the alarm would go off, it would be the news. And right. The first thing I'd hear at the start of every day was negative stuff.
Right, yeah.
And I just went, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started waking up with you doing that song.
Oh, excellent.
I just thought I'd say publicly that I woke up with Steve Bell on many occasions. So, okay, signpostmusic.com is the website. It's where you can get all these CDs. Signpostmusic.com. Thank you. Thank you for. I hesitate saying ending it like this because I've said this to a couple of other guests, so it's still in my head, but I still think the same about you. This is a long preamble for I like how you do what you do. What comes out of you is just a lifetime of integrity. The legacy you will leave, not that I have any reason for knowing that you're going soon or anything, but do you know something
you
I don't know?
Last night.
But you are leaving a phenomenal legacy. Phenomenal legacy.
You know, I come from one. You know, my parents and my grandparents, and there's just, you know, it's at a certain point you realize that you've inherited something that's really wonderful, and so I'm proud to be part of what I've inherited.
Good, good. Yeah. Well, aside from your musical career, I mean, Nancy and you are going to leave a phenomenal legacy, and they are doing so already with Sarah, Jesse, and Micah. And
my grandson, Luca.
Oh, and Luca. New, yeah, very
Sarah,
new.
Sarah had a baby boy this last spring, you know, so I'm Grandpa
Steve.
That's
a good line right there. I just like that line. Sarah had a baby boy last spring. Where could you launch from that?
Sarah? Yeah, wait, we can sing that one. Yeah, there's a little something.
Okay, a little something. And is it Kendara? Is that how you say it, Kendara?
Our foster daughter. Thank you. Yes, yeah. She just had a little baby girl 2 months ago as well. So we're kind of grandparents again there. Yeah, she's doing great. She was a huge part of our story as a family. And we lost touch with her, and she led some very dangerous years. And she survived those years, and she's now a great mom, and we see her regularly, and that was a tough story, but it's been a joyful one in the end.
Isn't that the way it usually is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Well, again, Steve Bell, Juno Award-winning artist in the studio with us today. Folks, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, it'll be the Council of Many, brought to you by Billy Graham Soul Chat, a place where conversations can begin, where a community can be built. Go to soulchat.ca today. This week on the Council of Many, what would you say to the parents of Brandon Crisp? Incredible story that they have gone through the last few weeks, and of course, they just found Brandon's body. We had Brandon's father on the show last week, and the mother's quoted in the Toronto Sun as saying, "I've given up on God." Understandable, her grief and what she might say or think at this point in time. What would you say to Brandon's family? 905-338-1250. That's the phone number. 905-338-1250. We'll be right back with the Council of Many. And then later on the show, Toronto Mass Choir, George Oliver and Ashley Cleveland.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.